enough respect to the sound, I'm gonna be at the King Forest zone. Bad zone, you see. To mend the broken heart. DJ Nicholas gonna be there with me Saturday night, see? Fight.
Can't we all unite? Can't we make things right? I mean, you all are we.
What made you drop out?
Well, a lot of people think it was the 400 acid trips I took, you know.
Uh-huh, but what was it really, Bob?
One day I played CKUT in 90.3.
Then what happened?
I saw God.
You I saw God. That. Well, that sounds like true enlightenment to me,
yeah,
Bob.
Yeah, it was Bob.
And on the seventh day, the Lord said,
let there be a CKUT.
www.ckut.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune into the Prison Radio Show on the fourth Friday of every month between 11 a.m. and noon, and every second Thursday of the month between 5 and 6 p.m. To get involved in Prison Radio, or if you need to access past programs, email prison@ckut.ca.
Yes, rehabilitation.
I wonder if you know what the word means. Do you? It comes from the Latin root habilis. The definition is to invest again with dignity. You consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had? Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
You were a number, you weren't a name, you want to be a human. I wasn't Jim Crow, and hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
The law. The law. When they hang my husband, is that just...
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show. My name is Virginia, and I'm your host for today's show. Today we're going to start with a story from the inside, a story that includes descriptions of violence done to prisoners, and a prisoner talking quite candidly about what violence from the guards has done to him. We have shared this audio in bits and pieces over the last month or so, but wanted to put all the pieces together for you. We will also have an interview about the situation unfolding on Rikers Island, an infamous jail in New York City. We have a lot of ground to cover, and so we're going to skip the news today and get right into it. Listeners, meet Lucas. Lucas is currently in prison in Bordeaux, a provincial prison on the island of Montreal. He's awaiting trial. Like lots of other provincial prisoners, he has not yet been sentenced. Lucas first started calling us in August to let us know about a situation that was unfolding on his sector. Here's an audio recording of him from September 7th explaining the situation.
So basically, over here in Bardo Detention Center in Montreal, we're dealing with a lot of closing over the weekends due to low on staff. They're making us pretty much stay in our cells, like pretty much 24/24. Some days we even have only 2 hours of exit on into our cells and everything, and basically me personally, my parents are losing it outside. They're always worried about me. They're always wondering exactly what's going on, because it makes no sense that every single weekend we're always locked up and we have only like 2 hours to get onto the floor. Feel that they're like destroying our rights completely. They're making us live what they're living outside, because basically from what I heard from them themselves, they're saying that they're going against the government because the government is trying to take away their pension.
After explaining the situation to us, Lucas wanted to share what he's doing about the situation. He called back on September 9th, and we recorded this together.
Okay, so basically, I have complaint sheets that I made all the way to third level. Basically, I have responses and everything of pretty much the confinement that we had over here in Bardo. Basically, the director of the of Bardo said in French, en raison de contraintes oppressionnelles, il est possible que les heures de sortie de cellules soient modifiées. Et c'est que sans préavis. Ces décisions sont prises afin d'assurer la sécurité de l'ensemble de primaires de l'établissement. Ainsi, le 27 juin, il nous a été possible de vous offrir du temps de sortir pour ces raisons. Soyez assurés que ces décisions font l'objet d'une évaluation au préalable et que les changements apportés au régime de vie des personnes incarcérées sont autorisés par la direction de l'établissement en tout temps. Votre plainte serait donc fondée mais sans collectif. So basically, she's saying that the reason why we're being locked up is because of security purposes, and it's not because of the manquement de personnel. It's like they're saying basically that the reason why the guards are not coming in and everything, we have to shut down everything because of security reasons. But there's other sectors that I've seen during that time where they're going outside, they're having fun outside and everything, and we're locked up in our cells. And then there's another complaint that I made, which he says the sergeant over here, the CU over here, ends up saying, pour des raisons de manquement de personnel et de sécurité, votre secteur est effectivement demeuré dans la journée en confinant plus longtemps que d'habitude. Sachez que les régimes de vie sont sujets à changement sans préavis, mais sachez également que nous faisons toute notre possibilité afin d'éviter ce genre de situation. Basically, they're saying that the CU is basically saying that, yeah, there's missing people working and everything, and that the type of schedule that we have in our sector could change at any time without being advised. And basically, they're saying that they're trying their best to try getting away from the problem, but it still continues every single day. And also, I even have a complaint sheet that I made not too long ago concerning because of the heat waves that we had over here. And I was saying that we need like more fans in our sector, and the ventilation system in our sector is always closed. And he says basically that we have showers, we have fridges that we could put our drinks, and basically that we could make them ice water. There's always water in our sectors. There's water inside our cells, and there's showers that we could use to refresh ourselves. But like, they don't care that we're suffering over here of like heat. And on top of that, like, while we're in our sector, on our cells, and we're locked up in our cells, they close the traps, and they don't even let any cold air coming in into our sector, or even in our cells. And then they're outside in, like, pure AC, and they're not even giving us a chance to being refreshed or anything like that. We don't even have chances of going in the showers half the times over the weekend. And I find it ridiculous that basically they do this, and it's going on for now like a couple of months, I would say, like about like 4 or 5 months now that it's been continuing.
Just to get it straight in terms of like the lineup of the things happening. So
yeah.
What you were saying in our last phone call was that since March 2021, you guys have been on pretty regular lockdowns. And during the week, what that looks like is that you're getting out of your cells maybe 2 hours a day, never for meals. And on the weekends, you're locked down like pretty much all the time. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And then, so these complaints you made, one was about that. And the response that you got was basically the warden being like, you know, this isn't happening because of any kind of work action on behalf of the staff. It's happening for security reasons, which is, you know, the vaguest thing that they can say to you guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Basically, you're using security reasons as a big thing, but, you know, there's other sectors and everything that are 10 times worse than us, as people that are arrested and everything. There's people that are even more security. Like, there's some ranges that you can't even get out without handcuffs and being tied up completely from head to toe. We're not like that, and we're like one of the nicest ranges in all of Bardo, and they treat us like we're the worst ones. And there's a lot of other sectors that are like outside of their cells most of the time over the weekend, and we're inside their cells. So it just makes no sense. They say that it's over security reasons and everything, but if it's over security reasons, why are you opening up other ranges? It's really ridiculous. Like yesterday, I didn't fight physically, but I fought like verbally with the guards, because they're just treating us like pure animals, and they have just no remorse, any remorse at all. They're saying that, you know, this is the way it is. This is the way of security and everything, but it's really not because of security, because there's half of the times they say that when they're doing rounds around the cells and everything to make sure that there's no people that are hurt, no people that are hanging themselves, because it happens in prison that people hang themselves and they get hurt. Over the weekends, they say that they do it they're supposed to do a round every hour to 30 minutes. But over the weekends, it's like half the time they don't do a round in like the next like 3 hours. Like they don't, like, you know, they say it's security reasons, but it's really not. It's like they try reversing the word security into like the biggest thing, and they make it sound like it's so like urgent and so bad, but really it's not.
This is the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. You're listening to a pre-recorded episode of our show featuring the story of Lucas, a prisoner who's currently incarcerated at Bordeaux Prison. At this point in Lucas's story, he has explained how his sector is locked down every weekend and how that's been hard for everyone on the sector. He tried getting explanations and was told that it was for security reasons. He's filed complaints, but nothing's changed. Then, on September 23rd, early in the morning, we got another call. This time, Lucas had been roughed up by the guards. Here's his story of what happened.
So, at the hour of 3:15, guards came into the sector of the B, and they ended up coming straight to me, grabbing me from the neck, punching me right into the rib cage, and bringing me straight to the floor, slamming me against the fridge of our sector, slamming me against the table. Then they brought me outside of the sector. They ended up bringing me into a room where they slammed me against the door four times before they ended up kneeing me from behind to put me on the ground, because they were telling me to go onto the ground and everything, and I was telling them, you can't do this, like, it's against the law, and I'm not doing anything to resist from you guys, because usually when they put you onto the floor from behind with their knees, it's because you're resisting, and I wasn't even resisting at all. I was actually behaving with them, and they were telling me a bunch of things. They were telling me, what the fuck is your problem? And your attitude, because what ended up happening is that I ended up asking for a complaint sheet to be done, and they were refusing to take it, and they're refusing to do it. And I ended up getting mad at them, saying that you guys don't know how to work, you're lazy and everything. And basically, they came up to me and they started manhandling me like if I was a freaking animal over here. Also, on the worst part later on in the night, I get met with the sergeant of our sector, and he ends up giving me shit for calling the public curator, letting them know that this event happened, and he told me exactly to make a charge against the prison guard, and also to make a detailed letter to us. Me personally, I do not really like the fact that the public curator of the provincial system, because they work with these guards a lot, and I find that they don't really do anything to really intervene. And the sergeant yesterday gave me shit, ended up telling me, what's your freaking attitude? You're making a huge ass story out of this when nothing happened to you. I ended up repeating to him, well, how would you like if you were back from behind while you were even pouring some hot coffee? I ended up freaking pouring freaking hot water on my hand. And they bring you outside and they start bringing you by force, slamming you on doors, slamming you on the table, kicking you, punching you. Like, I really, really was very shocked about this. It was something that I thought would have never, never happened over here in the prison system of Bardo. It's really something ridiculous. And I find that there should be something done about this, because it's unacceptable that they end up taking us like if we're animals and grabbing us when we did absolutely nothing to them. Mm-hmm. That's like impulsive or, for example, aggressive.
So I'm just curious about this, like, public commissioner that you can make complaints to. What is that body, and like, how did the sergeant know that you had made a complaint there?
Well, because, like I said, a couple of days before, I made a level one complaint, and I never got my copy of it, because usually how it works over here is that you make a complaint, you get a copy later on at night, and everything's okay. But me, I never got my copy, so I asked the guard if I could have my copy. They refused to give it to me, so I ended up going ahead straight to level two, because that's what the public curator told me, and they were completely against me to the point that they did what they did, pretty much.
And how are you feeling today? Like, this all happened yesterday?
Seriously, I woke up today and I was very shocked. I didn't think this was ever going to happen to me. I woke up with fear and everything. I really was out of fear and everything. Like, right now, they're calling me to leave the sector, to go to a room. And, you know, sometimes I'm like, okay, are these guys really going to do something bad to me, or are they just going to bring me and they're going to leave me there and everything's fine?
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I have these fears now, and, you know, I'm going to make my complaint to VBAC and everything. So, you know, that's exactly what I'm going to do.
Our call with Lucas got cut off as he was called off the sector, but he managed to call back that same day. And first he introduced us to Mark. Mark is also on his sector and witnessed the incident. Here's Mark's story of what happened.
Dans le fond, c'est ça. Dans le fond, hier, il y a eu une situation, là. Écoute, c'est sa première fois de guerre. Ça fait depuis 2011 là, que je viens à Bordeaux.
OK.
J'ai jamais vu ça de ma vie. Le gars, là, carrément, il a perdu le contrôle, là. Ils ont vraiment perdu le contrôle. Moi, je pense que c'est à cause du manque d'effectifs, là. Ils ont comme, on dirait qu'ils ont comme, ils ont plus de patience, là, genre, là. Mais là, ils s'en prennent, nous autres, là, c'est plus juste là, des plaintes ou des niaiseries. Là, ils l'ont pris comme si c'était un animal. Là, je veux dire, et en plus, ils l'ont pris de... C'est même pas comme ils prennent la personne de devant. Là, ils l'ont pris de dos, là, en plus. C'est comme trois dessus, puis on parle de des gars de 6 pieds, puis 200 livres. Pas des petits ronds, et c'est ça. Là, c'est pas des minces... des vieux monsieur, là. C'est vraiment là, des jeunes, là, qui ont pris... Le gars, il me dit, dans le fond, lui, il me dit, ah, c'est parce que moi, dans le fond, je travaille dans le trou, puis je suis pas encore adapté. Hey, ça va être correct, là, t'es pas encore adapté. Là. T'es supposé d'être capable de pas être adapté à n'importe quelle situation, t'es un agent correctionnel. Là. supposé de montrer l'exemple. Là, t'es pas supposé. Je comprends que il y a le fait aussi qui est insulté. Ça, je suis d'accord. Il n'y a aucun problème là-dessus. Il sait qu'il a fait quelque chose de mal. Mais si tu ouvres la porte, puis tu demandes au pays de venir avec toi, puis de parler de la situation, puis de dire, écoute, si ça réarrive, on va te donner un rapport de disciplinaire. Ça n'a pas de sens, là. Pas le prendre comme si c'était un objet, puis le tirer comme un animal. Là. Ça n'a pas d'allure, là.
Et tu penses que ça se passe parce qu'il y a un manque de gardes à ce moment?
Oui, je pense que ça. Ben oui, c'est ça.
OK.
C'est sûr que ça. C'est parce que là, ils ont plus de tâches à faire, ils ont plus de travail. Fait que ça doit jouer sur leur patience. Puis il y a comme l'autre, il l'a insulté, puis là, il a comme perdu la tête, le gars, là, carrément. Là.
Et t'as pas vu les autres choses comme ça qui se passent dans les dernières semaines?
J'ai déjà vu des situations d'intervention, mais parce que la personne était agressive ou était menaçante, là. Je veux dire, lui, il est pas menaçant pour deux, tu sais, je veux pas être méchant avec lui, mais il est pas menaçant pour deux cents, là. C'est en plus qu'on est en protect-sex, là. Je veux dire, on n'est pas dans le C ou dans le E, dans des gros swings de, tu sais, comme qu'il y a des gars qui sont pas mal plus solides qu'ici, hein. Tu sais, là. Fait que c'est pour ça, je comprends pas pourquoi que, puis en plus, moi, j'ai demandé à un agent, j'ai dit, pourquoi que c'est comme ça? Ben, il dit, parce que vous insultez les agents. J'ai dit, ouais, mais j'ai dit, c'est deux personnes. On n'a pas à payer pour tout le monde. Je veux dire, comme, prends les personnes en question, puis parle-leur, mais fais pas subir la colère, votre colère sur tout le monde. Là. C'est pas la faute à tout le monde. Là. C'est comme, ils mettent tout le monde dans le même bateau. C'est ça que j'aime pas. Puis tu sais, il y a beaucoup de discrimination aussi, là. De faire, tu sais, moi, me faire dire, c'est parce que t'es protect-sex. OK, ben, c'est parce qu'on n'est pas tous des pédophiles, là, je suis désolé, mais il y en a que oui, là, mais on est tous classés dans la même catégorie, là. C'est comme, c'est pas correct, là, je veux dire, il y en a qui ont fait des erreurs de parcours, là. D'autres personnes qui ont fait d'autres crimes dans la prison, là, on est traités comme des moins que rien, là.
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and online at www.ckut.ca. We're in the middle of sharing the story of a prisoner in Bordeaux who was beat up by guards on September 22nd. We just heard from his cellmate, who explained his view of what happened. After Mark hung up, Lucas called us again. Here's what he had to say.
Basically, a lot of stuff was happening to the point that, you know, it was getting really ridiculous. You know, I didn't do anything wrong. Like Michael Luck said, it's like I'm a very small kid. I'm not very threatening. I'm not someone who's aggressive. It's my first time in jail, and all of this happened, and I'm just surprised because I never saw this. I've seen it in movies and everything, and I always thought that it was, like, not real. But because of this happening, now I'm, like, afraid of the guards completely. I have pain on my neck because of them. And also, not only do I have pain and I'm scared of them, I don't know what's going on. Like, what I mean by that is I don't know, like, what could I do. I don't know if, you know, these guys are going to do it again, and I don't know if, you know, this could be really something that's a fireable offense, you understand? Because, seriously, you know, this should have never happened in the first place. And on top of it, if it wasn't for a guard that I knew in the event, he basically told the guard to relax because he wanted to legit punch me in the face. It was really, really to that point, and it was really serious. I didn't accept that at all. It's something that really, really caused me a lot of fear now. Like, I have pain on my neck. I don't know if I'm gonna get through this, and I'm scared now because I don't know if ever these guards are gonna do it again. basically, when I was getting pulled out, everyone in the range was going nuts. There was just like people that's done time in the penitentiary, like Donnacona, which is a maximum penitentiary. And, you know, they never saw this, like, maximums. Yeah, you know, like, stuff happened. You know, I know how it works with maximums because I have a stepfather that's done penitentiary time. Him specifically told me that it plays rough in maximum penitentiaries. The cars are rough and everything. They could be rough, but they're, like, if you're respectful with them, they're respectful with you. And there was a lot of people that were going crazy, just to the point that I came in and they were ready to freaking open the door. Like, they were telling the guards, open the door, take me. Mm-hmm. You need to see how it worked. The other side of the sector, because we're like face to face with other sectors. They were telling me, they were completely telling me, like, what the heck are you doing? You're letting these guys take you and everything. Fight back, man. And it's like, me, I'm not the type of guy to fight back. I don't like it. And everyone, like, me personally, I was very upset. I didn't take it out on them, but I took it out on the fridge in our sector. I took it out on a wall in my sector. Like, I lost my complete mind, and everyone was really aggressive, and one of the guys were, like, coming up to me, like, yo, what the heck is your problem? And I told him, I'm like, yo, are you being serious? Like, you can't tell me that I can't do this when I've been manhandled like a freaking animal.
This is the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. We're currently sharing a story out of Bordeaux Prison, a provincial prison on the island of Montreal. The story centers around a prisoner named Lucas, who's currently awaiting trial in Bordeaux. His sector was locked down every weekend, meaning that prisoners can't go to the yard, call family, or shower. He's been frustrated and started filing complaints, seeking an explanation. The only reply he got from the administration is that it's a security concern, one of the most frequent explanations given for any hardship within the prison system. Once receiving this explanation, nothing changed, and so Lucas tried to file another grievance. In the process of filing this grievance, he got into an argument with the guards and, in frustration, called them some names. In response, they grabbed him by the neck, threw him to the ground, threw him into a fridge, pulled him off the sector, and brought him into another room where he was thrown around some more. He got a visit that night in his cell from a sergeant who was mad that he had filed yet another grievance related to the incident, and the sergeant told him to chill out. At this point, Lucas was scared and trying to figure out what to do next. He called to update us again on September 30th.
Basically, I got transferred because I put charges on the guards that that did some damage to me on the 22nd of September. And now that I'm transferred to Ascendance Wing of basically Bordeaux, everything has been going good. I get along with a lot of people over here. I know a lot of people. Stuff's going pretty much better, but there's still that fear that I have inside me of getting out of the wing. I'm always looking behind me when the guards are like around me. I'm always a little scared of what's going to happen, you know. I basically have a lot of fear inside me that's still going on. And there's my mom that's completely devastated from what happened to me. And I have a lot of family members outside that are very devastated, always telling me to do something about it. I'm pretty much going all the way to the end with this because this shouldn't be happening to anybody in the prison system. It shouldn't be happening to any of us detainees to be getting hurt by a bunch of guards just because they have the authority to do it whenever they want to. It's against the law, and me personally, I'm going to go all the way to the top to get this law adjusted because these guards think they're like a big bodyguard that basically they tend to do whatever they want to, whenever they want to, and it's not unacceptable. And this is why, basically, I'm reaching out to a lot of social medias
and I'm even reaching out to media people like Global News. I have already the I'm going to reach out to a lot of sources and everything. I have some friends outside that are helping me out too. So, you know, I'm just here sticking in, and I'm trying to do my time as much as possible. I still have a long while to go because I haven't gotten sentenced yet. But, you know, I'm still doing my thing, even though I have a little bit of fear with these guards. Usually my days are a little bit better than what it was back then.
And so that's where things are at with Lucas's story. This is the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. If you also want to share your stories from the inside, you can always call us collect at 514-876-3748 from Bordeaux or RDP prisons. You've been hearing music from the group Anarchist Mountain Trio's song Conspiracy Means Breathing Together, and you just heard Leanne Bettis-Samosaki Simpson's Head of the Lake. You're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. The unfolding situation at Rikers Island Prison is the subject of our next segment. The situation in Rikers has been in the news a lot lately as conditions deteriorate for prisoners. 11 prisoners have died in Rikers in the last year, 12 if you include the prison barges that surround the island. Conditions inside are awful, dirty, and crowded, with prisoners facing a lack of food and lack of medical attention. But the main thing that has been in the news lately has been the staff shortages plaguing Rikers, which grabbed our attention due to their role in the story you just heard about Bordeaux. We spoke with Amelia, who lives in New York and volunteers in the library at Rikers, about the situation unfolding there. Here's Amelia.
Just like in thinking about the bigger picture of staffing at prisons and jails, I was doing this book club for a long time, and one of the guys, it was in the federal facility, and one of the guys in the book club was like, oh, before I got transferred here, I was in a private prison, and that was like, he was the only one that I had spoken to who had really experienced a private prison, and he was talking about how there were a really, really low number of guards, but it was because everything in the prison was done by electronic. Everyone had like a wrist monitor thing that was like, you know, unremovable. And like every time they went to a door, they would like scan, and it's like, let's say someone was on the other side of the door that they weren't allowed to interact with, the door wouldn't open, and it was like everything was like robot. It just made me think about how, yes, the answer is less staff, less money, budget, you know, but like also there's this other sort of like dystopian project that's going on where it's like the jail of the future is we don't have to deal with these problematic COs. We just like, you know, lock everyone up in like a robot castle.
My name is Amelia and I live in New York City, and I'm pretty familiar with what's going on at Rikers because of volunteer work that I do there with library services and corresponding with people inside and generally paying attention to mainstream and other news to see what's being said about it.
So we've been following the escalating situation in Rikers for the past few months, and you could even say the past few years. I feel like people have been trying to shut down Rikers for years now. And it seems like in the last year alone, there's been a lot of deaths in Rikers, as well as reports of deteriorating conditions, like lack of food and lack of medical services. Can you talk about the situation there in brief? Like, what's going on?
It's really important to recognize the emergency that's happening now, but then to also kind of put it in the context, like you said, that it's like always been an emergency and, you know, always will be as long as it's open, right? So it's sort of like the conditions have never been good and never will be, but there is, you know, there are waves. And I think that we're in a particular wave right now based on all these different factors coming together that's making it particularly dangerous. And I think that COVID truly did set off some of those conditions and make them worse. And then it kind of snowballed from there. And there's a lot of, I would say, reaction from the staff that work there in reaction to COVID, to dealing with COVID, to people getting sick, that then turned into something very different. And of course, like many things about COVID, was very politicized. And then, of course, you had the 2020 uprisings, which also contributed to the political mood, I would say. And so the lack of services are really, really like an intentional sick out, or you could say like a work stoppage or work slow down by the staff there.
And are they in the context of negotiating a contract, or you think that most of this is happening in reaction to the political climate and things like COVID and the uprising last summer?
I'm not sure what the specifics are in terms of like how the unions are negotiating contracts at the moment, but I do know that there's a constant push for more officers, right? The union, which is COBA, the Correction Officers Benevolent Association, is sort of notoriously, it notoriously ignores all other factors other than we need to hire more people and give people, you know, a lot of money and a lot of hours and things like that, and ignore other factors. And I think that when those quote unquote shortages started happening because of, I would say, legitimate reasons, like people contracting COVID and being out sick, the snowball effect was that those shortages then caused people to, you know, work doubles and triples. And then it sort of was this like, I mean, Rikers is a very terrible, terrible place to work. You know, I don't respect the decision to choose to be a corrections officer at all. I'll just say that. But, you know, once you're there, it's like absolutely just hell on earth. And I think that like when people were then there, you know, with fewer staff members around and doing doubles and triples, like just the quality of like your day got so bad and the stress level so high that then it became this war between the people working there and the people incarcerated there. It became a war between the frontline staff and like the administration. And it like that's sort of how this political thing sort of mounted to become this like sort of unofficial work slowage.
One of the things that I was reading about in preparing for this is that de Blasio had, the mayor of New York City, for people who don't know, had decreased the number of people in the jails in New York pretty sharply at the start of the pandemic. But there's still this situation happening in Rikers. So is there something about overpopulation in the jail happening too? Like what's going on in terms of numbers of people being imprisoned at the moment?
Yeah, and like as dry as it may be, I think it is actually really important to talk about numbers because it really does say something. And so, for instance, like there was a, like, let's say, decarceration effort, you know, at the beginning of COVID to get people out. And it has gone back to the number pre-COVID. Like, I mean, it truly, it was sort of, you know, they did their best to, well, I wouldn't say they did their best, but they made an effort to empty the jails to some degree, and then it went right back up again to pre-COVID levels. But I think even more important is that there was actually, over several years before, a very large decrease. So it was a 52% decrease in the population between 2012 and 2020. But the corrections budget in that same time went up 24%. So, you know, you have now a correction staff that's, you have a department that's overstaffed to like such a crazy degree. And like right now, the ratio of people incarcerated to COs is 3 to 5. There's 3 people incarcerated for every 5 correction staff members. I mean, it's unlike most or almost all probably other big city jails in this country. And I mean, it's just like sort of an outlier. And because of that huge difference in the ratio, you have this insane cost to incarcerate someone in New York City. So it costs $438,000 a year to incarcerate someone in New York. And when you look at other big cities, the second most expensive city is King County, is Seattle. And that's $150,000 per year to incarcerate someone. So, and then you have like places like Los Angeles and Cook County, which is Chicago. They're less than $100,000 a year. And like, I'm not saying these numbers to be like, look how cheap it is in this way. Like, you know, these jails, these notorious big city jails, are all just absolutely terrible. The conditions are terrible. People are treated terribly and brutally. But you have this outlier in New York City that they're just spending a ridiculous amount of money to do it. And it's almost all on staff.
In another thing that happened in recent weeks is that I'm not sure if this is like the administration in New York City, like the government in New York City or the state government, started suspending people or threatening to suspend the guards if they don't show up for work. What's up with that? What's that as a tactic? What does that mean?
Right. So there have been a lot of staff just going AWOL, right? And which is interesting already to even use the phrase AWOL, because obviously that's usually used for, you know, the military. And but yeah, people doing a no-call, no-show, where we know that in most jobs, doing a no-call, no-show means you get fired, right? And there was very little oversight to deal with this problem of staff just not showing up to work. And there were a lot of other staff who were calling out sick. And so they were not showing up. They were calling out sick. But the COs have unlimited sick leave, unlimited paid sick leave. And so, yeah, they're trying to control this problem by making it so that people have to get a doctor's note for their very first day of being out sick, which is also sort of a ridiculous thing. And, you know, I'm not saying that these COs should go AWOL, but it's like we all know that having a job sucks. And like to have to do a sick note from a doctor on day one is sort of setting up a situation where people will be finding ways to fake it. You know, like, I mean, it's just a ridiculous response to a ridiculous problem. But yeah, like now the supposed policy is that people will have, I think, 30 days suspension unpaid if they do a no-call, no-show. And, you know, will that actually happen? Will there be oversight? The Department of Corrections is notoriously disorganized. And I do think that it's unlikely that there'll be like a really, you know, smooth system to deal with the problem.
There's also been reports in the media about politicians going to visit Rikers, that de Blasio went there for the first time in 4 years. Has there been more attention on this situation? And why do you think there has been, if there has been?
Yeah, I mean, sadly, I think that the deaths have been a factor in that, in there being more media attention. But from everything I've seen, the media stories have been incredibly irresponsible. Even the fact that the media keeps using the words staff shortage, I mean, that right there is so irresponsible. And it's just this parroting where one outlet says it and all the other ones repeat it. And, you know, it's not a shortage. It's something entirely different. And the media response is like sort of typical, like they have to, they feel that they have to, you know, cover it. But they're really not doing it in a way that talks to people who are directly impacted. I mean, when de Blasio went to visit, he didn't talk to a single person incarcerated there. He didn't even see the areas where actually the problems were. You know, they painted and emptied out and painted these intake areas that were particularly problematic. And he went and looked at freshly painted empty cells. So, you know, and then the other politicians who went, who saw very terrible things and experienced things, like, I mean, you know, it's in and out of the news cycle quickly. And then you have you know, families and friends and entire communities who are still mourning the people that died. I think it was 5 people out of the 12 who've died who committed suicide. And some of the stuff that I've seen inside is just, it takes those like news stories and adds all the other layers to it. I saw a unit that was being rushed by 20 COs and the special search team, and they were rushing in saying they had a drug search in progress. And one of the mental health staff was walking toward the area and said, "Oh no, are they going to do a search? Is it going to take them a long time? Oh, I'm supposed to do a check in there because a bunch of guys in there are on suicide watch. Oh well, I guess I can't do it right now." And so, like, the problems are being talked about in the news, but just the lack of constructive conversation and the lack of solution that's being offered is just mind-blowing.
Yeah, I was reading like a really short brief update about Rikers in the New York Times this morning, and the entire focus was on the lawlessness in the prison and how the prisoners have taken over Rikers, which really, I mean, when you're looking at people who are facing literal food shortages, that really doesn't seem like a prisoners have taken over this jail kind of situation.
Yeah, and those stories are so blown out of proportion by COBA. Like, the union has an incredible amount of power, and they want to paint that picture, you know? So, you know, like, is the staff crisis, like, to a point where there may be a unit that doesn't have a staff member in it for a certain amount of time? Yeah, that's true. But does that amount to some kind of, like, absolute chaos? Like, not always, you know? People are often just, like, locked inside their cells, and there's sort of, like, these unofficial lockdowns. And I think that that's a big problem, is that, you know, so much of the response is done in a way that's extrajudicial, right? So, like, for instance, people with mental illness, supposedly now it's illegal to put them in solitary confinement, and yet they're just locked in the cell all day because they're, you know, sort of responding because it's all they could do. It's like an emergency because they were, you know, in the words of like some of the COs, they were freaking out, and so they locked them in all day, and it amounts to solitary, and they just call it something different. So I think a lot of the response is like not based on policy, which is why responding with policy is just falling incredibly short and always has there.
So you mentioned that one of the contexts for this situation is the uprisings that happened across the US last summer. I'm curious if you want to talk a bit more about that in the context of all of these policy decisions coming up really short, and, you know, people sort of changing the language to do the same thing, like locking someone in and it's still solitary, even if it's not in the specific solitary cell in the prison or whatever. But yeah, can you talk a bit about what the uprising and the uprising's focus on like police abolition and to a lesser extent prison abolition means for the situation at Rikers right now in terms of actual solutions?
Yeah, there was definitely, you know, a defensiveness among law enforcement and the COs at Rikers in terms of the anti-police sentiments that were, gaining steam and growing. And I think that, you know, they don't want to be seen that way, and they feel combative when they hear those messages. And I think that a weird and long-standing dynamic that happens is that the Corrections Department in New York is majority Black and brown staff. It's only 10% white. And the commissioner is always white. Shortly after the uprisings, the old commissioner left, who was like the second in a string of staff members, like high up staff members who came from the state of Maine and came to New York City to like reform things and change things. And, you know, as you might imagine, a lot of these like born and raised New Yorkers who worked there were like, F this guy or F this lady. Like, and now the new commissioner is touted as a big reformer who's going to go in and, you know, make things humane and deal with people's needs. And the staff are completely skeptical. And there's, you know, like I said, sort of a war between the staff and the administration. And I think like they're unwilling to do any reforms that they either think or have been told will endanger their safety. Like, for instance, doing away with solitary. They think that it's absolutely necessary to protect them. And they're also totally unwilling to listen to the people on top because they're sort of disconnected and don't truly understand what the day-to-day is like. I don't want to sound like I'm sympathizing with them, but there's just this dynamic of like people coming in and thinking that they can change it when the reality is, and it's even something that the CEOs know and everyone who's incarcerated there know, it's not going to change. It's like completely, completely embedded in the culture and the place. Closing Rikers and building new jails is not going to change it. It's like this forever monster.
I know there have been lots of campaigns to like shut down Rikers in recent years. Have there also been people who are saying more than that, like saying not just shut down Rikers, but don't build a bunch of new jails in New York City too? Like, how is that playing into the dynamic?
Absolutely. There was a huge No New Jails campaign that was, of course, not saying keep Rikers open. It was saying close Rikers and no new jails. And, you know, we can find other ways, like, you know, sort of give the decision-making power to the community, give it to grassroots groups that know how to deal with transformative justice, accountability process, like take it away from the police and the courts. But, you know, that's such an incredibly long road and one that's totally worthy. But I think that like to the existing administration, like it's like a pipe dream to them and not something that they want to risk their political platform and their political power on. A few have like stepped forward and sort of made that their line, but, you know, they don't get very far. And then, of course, like even if they want to commit to those ideas, in the end, they'll be forced to compromise to something else. But I do think that recently, like in the last few weeks, there have been calls to decarcerate again. And then you have the CO union, you know, on the other side saying, go ahead and decarcerate. They're just going to be right back in. And while their argument is that it's because, like, you know, these people are innately criminal and they can't stop doing crimes, it's in their nature, like that's their side of the argument. But in a way, what they're saying about they'll just be right back in is true because of the way that the police are harassing and targeting the same people over and over again and criminalizing them without dealing with any of the conditions of poverty and abuse, you know, trauma, like all the things that are leading people to have to break the law. And like, I think that there's certainly no critical eye on the law itself and how the courts are designed to protect certain people and punish others. But it's just hard to look to the people who already have power to see, you know, what's positive that they could do next, because it just tends to fall back on something that's not enough.
I think I've been focusing a lot on like this, the guards and like the working conditions and the like bigger policy questions, but I'm curious if we could circle back to the day-to-day conditions inside and what, from where you're standing, seems like the most helpful thing to be doing for people who are, you know, slogging through the day-to-day in that situation in Rikers as a prisoner.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that the things that me and the people I like work with and work around, like what we hear the most from people and the people that we're in communication with is that they need solid legal help and they need medical help. And those are two things that require a lot of knowledge and specialization. And I think that that's where it gets tricky, because I think that people want to help in a lot of ways. And when someone, you know, like if you have a pen pal and you're like, let's talk about these, you know, political texts that we're sharing, you know, and they're like, great, but can you also find me a new lawyer, you know? And I think that while that's possible with some, in some groups that have some resources, if you're, let's say, just an individual who wants to connect with someone, I think having just sort of like an emotional support and someone that can be relied upon and consistent is really important. Inside, the medical staff are dealing with not seeing people for their appointments. You know, the work slowdowns have really, really affected people's access to medical care and, you know, both physical and mental medical care. And the situation in the courts is sort of mirroring that, in that there's just like this huge slog where people's cases are being delayed and they're just sort of perpetually on Rikers because every time they go to court, the prosecution isn't ready. And it's like, you chose to arrest and charge this person, and you just are not ready again, you know? So I think that there are things that feel a bit out of control of folks who are trying to organize around these issues. But for instance, there's some wonderful work being done around court support. And so even though someone might not have tons of like legal expertise, doing something like court support is really valuable, because just showing up and letting the judge and the DA know like this person is cared about and people are paying attention makes a huge difference. It was a challenge during COVID because there was so much video court, and there still is a lot of video court happening. And so it doesn't have necessarily the same impact, but it still has some impact to show up virtually. But I think the other thing is, you know, like I said, just being consistent with whatever you're able to offer. So if you're able to offer simply friendship to someone, being able to understand, you know, your capacity and being consistent with it is wonderful.
I think that's it for my questions. Do you feel like there's anything that I didn't cover that you wanted to say?
I feel like I want to go back to this idea that like, the situation is an emergency now, but also always, and just that inside, even though the day-to-day is absolutely wretched and there's just so much to deal with there, I think that having not been in to do library services for many, many months during COVID and then going back in, I just was, you know, instantly seeing people helping each other out. And I think that, like, you know, that was another effect of the uprisings, where, as like we were talking about, the COs having this, you know, defensive, combative reaction to it, I think that people really did start paying more attention politically. And I think that, you know, they sort of have more space to have conversations about how to support themselves and each other and just be there for each other and be able to advocate and let their grievances be known. And, you know, despite the process that has to be dealt with, like this all just red tape and things when there is an issue, you know, people are feeling a little bit more like they're not alone in that. And even down to little things, I mean, just because like I'm a library person and like a library lover. And so it's like, you know, you go and then you see this guy saying like, oh, hold on. Let me wake this guy up because he's napping and I know he's going to want to see these like graphic novels. And then it's like the guy is like, wakes up sleepy and he's like, oh shit, you have Marvel? Okay, great. You know, and it's like he took care of him because he knew that he would want that. Like, I don't know, just like little small things can sometimes mean like people are hanging on to just like being together with each other and like being human. So
you've been listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and online at www.ckut.ca. That was Amelia, who lives in New York and volunteers in the library at Rikers Island Prison. She was talking to us about the unfolding situation there as prisoners face food shortages, constant lockdowns, and lack of medical attention due to staff work actions like sick outs and going AWOL. As for where to get updates, Amelia recommended checking out Alec Karakitsanis on Twitter at @EqualityAlec, and also Victoria Law, who is on Twitter at @LVickyML. If Twitter isn't your thing, Amelia also recommended the coverage of the situation in The Intercept. We will also try and update listeners if we get any future updates. Check out past episodes of the Prison Radio Show at prisonradioshow.wordpress.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Prison Radio Show. Parts of our show are also available through podcasting apps. You can find us on prisonradioshow.libsyn.com as well. The Prison Radio Show airs twice a month on CKUT. We're on the air on the second Thursday of the month at 5 p.m. and the fourth Friday of the month at 11 a.m. Our next show will air on Friday, October 22nd at 11 a.m. If you have any questions about anything you've heard on today's show, or if you want to be involved in the show, definitely feel free to contact us. Our email address is prison@ckut.ca. You can also call us collect at 514-876-3748 from Bordeaux or RDP prisons. We're also available through a regular phone at 438-337-8423. If you're in prison, we encourage you to participate in the show in any way possible. Feel free to write to us. We're at PRS, care of CKUT, 3647 University Street, Montreal, Quebec, H3A2B3. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Virginia, and I've been your host for today. Please stay tuned. Thank you.
If you have flu-like or COVID-19-like symptoms, such as fever, cough, loss of taste or smell, or if you have been in contact with someone infected with the virus, it's essential to get tested and to follow isolation instructions, even if you're vaccinated. Screening remains one of the best ways to limit outbreaks. To find out more, visit quebec.ca/test-covid-19. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional, student, community productions in and around Montreal, Chautauqua, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, October 14th, 2021. On tonight's show, my guests. Creator John Lachlan Stewart mocks the body politic in The King Stinks for Festival Phenomena.
It would be funny to tell a story about a really great president or a really great, great prime minister who enters into power, who everybody loves, like a Jean de Trudeau kind of president, or, you know, or an Obama type of president, but that suddenly this president would start stinking horribly.
Alison Darcy and Joseph Schrag revisit their award-winning tale about a hermit and the person who wants to be her friend.
I'd seen this documentary about this hermit living in the taiga. Her name was Agafya Bikova, and it kind of fascinated both of us, how to live so disconnected from the world.